Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks. Tom, what happened to those rain chances? They are disappearing very quickly. I mean, we're kind of, it went from 70% down to 50, down to 20.
It is odd. They kind of disappear and then they come back.
Yeah.
Now, they're saying they may come back tomorrow night, but then they're supposed to get even better by Sunday and into Monday. So
well,
keep your fingers crossed.
From a selfish point of view, I've already had 3 inches up at our house last Saturday, so
Are you keeping that 3 inches in that rain gauge vial so that you can admire it when you get home?
I should have taken a picture. It's the Buckmaster Show. We are in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studio, part of the growing presence of Bustos Media here in Tucson. 5 radio stations now under one roof. Our latest acquisition, a very popular station. It's called The Drive, 101.7. They're doing very well, and they're right here across the hall from where we're doing our program. But this is 1030 KVOI, The Voice. We're in our, 13 and a half years with the radio show, and before that, 22 years with TV. So that's about 36th year in Tucson media. We have our worldwide live listening and podcasts at buckmastershow.com. When we do our telephone interviews, if someone wants to call in with a question, 790-2040, that's our Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management live line. Our media partners, TucsonSentinel.com, Dylan Smith and the crew, Dan Shear and his gang at the Green Valley News and Saharita Sun, and I get to say for the first time in over 6 months, welcome back to the show. You did fill in for me, and I do appreciate it when I took a couple of days over to Santa Barbara and Marina Del Rey, but this is the first time I've had you back with me in studio.
And I am really glad to be back. I was off for
four months
serving on the grand jury. Yes.
Bless your heart.
Okay, that's one way to put it. But hey, it was worth the $12 a day, Bill.
Oh, there you go.
Minus parking.
Okay, yeah. We have a new media partner, and they're doing very well. It's called Tucson Agenda. So all three of those particular media outlets, big supporters of what we do. Our Friday Focus interview is with Pima County Sheriff Chris Nanos. Chris is a native of El Paso, and that's where Sheriff Nanos began his law enforcement career. He became a member of the Pima County Sheriff's Department in 1984. He started off in corrections, then was promoted to deputy the following year. In 2020, Sheriff Nanos was elected as sheriff. He's responsible for a department comprised, nearly 1,500 employees. And there are also 400 volunteers that want to help out the sheriff. And I guess those folks, you really couldn't do what you do, could you, Sheriff, without the volunteers? First of all, good to see you.
Well, thank you, Bill, and it's good to see you and Dan. But yes, there's no way we could accomplish what we do without the volunteers. They just mean so much to not just me, but all of our team. They're truly a treasure, a valued treasure for us.
All right, let's begin with being a person who cares about animal welfare issues. Let's begin with there was a missing canine, part of your canine force.
Oh my goodness, that was probably the worst.
What happened
there?
That
was the worst morning. One of the worst mornings I woke up to. We had a young CO who is a canine handler. This is one of our drug dogs. He's actually just a great little pup. You know, he's done over 13,000 searches in his 2 or 3 years with us, and he's just a great pup.
So he's considered a veteran, really.
Oh,
with that,
my goodness.
Man, even though
yeah.
he's a pup,
oh,
he's a veteran canine. Yeah,
yeah, and you know, like dogs can do, this one escaped, and we were so very fortunate. The young family that found him, he was actually right in the middle of the intersection.
Oh my
kind of
goodness.
Limping, and this is dark hours. It's 10-11 o'clock at night, and they probably saved his life. So yeah, I've got nothing but gratitude, and I'll tell you what, the real gratitude goes out to not just social media, because that thing went viral
everywhere.
Real quick, and
everywhere.
I couldn't appreciate more of it, but also our TV media, they stepped up and they kept on
with the picture
the day.
And everything.
Oh yeah, they were tremendous help. So I owe a lot of thanks to our our community, but our electronic media for sure.
Is the dog okay?
Yes, yes. He was in my office the other day meeting that family, and they have a big old yellow lab. Oh, my goodness. They were just playing. A lot of fun.
I'm going to turn it over to Dan Shear.
And we should mention the dog's name, Damon.
Damon. Yeah, Damon, a.k.a. Frank, because they have a little two-year-old, the family that found him, and they didn't know what to call him, so they called him Frank.
Frank.
And so we gave him an alias.
And he is one of how many animals? We don't talk much about
that
your
type,
whole canine force.
So you have different reasons and purpose dogs. Mm-hmm. This purpose dog was dedicated to sniffing fentanyl in our jail. And so now we have four.
Okay. Okay, Dan, sure.
Well, you're up for re-election. I attended debates involving the candidates, one in Oral Valley, one in Green Valley. And so some of these are going to be some follow-up questions from that. In Green Valley, we all know it's a tough job being a deputy, and you said that sometimes they need to talk to people, and we have services set up. I think I'm asking this because after spending 4 months on a grand jury facing detectives who are doing some really, really rough work out there, you can see it in the eyes of some of them. They need someone to talk to. How does this work out that they have these needs met?
So Chad Casmar, Chief Casmar, a great friend and a bigger partner. We talk, if not daily, weekly. He started with this program called Struggle Well, and it actually comes from a company, Boulder Crest, that is in Sonoyta, and they treat post-traumatic PTSD for veterans, and they've done this for years. And they were approached and said, "Hey, could you take this program to cops?" And Chief Casmar is so right. You know, we see some horrific things that just people, you just never will see. No matter what TV or movies you're watching, it's just not even close. And for years and years, I was involved in a shooting and many years ago, and I remember the next day, you just went back to work. it is about, we recognize that our teams need help. We want to treat and keep our community safe and healthy. We need to keep those who are responsible for that safe and healthy too. And this program, I thought, boy, these are tough old cops. They're never going to go for this stuff. And my goodness, it's just exploded. And so,
what's the name of the program?
It's Struggle Well.
Struggle Well.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's you know, we are now in the process of expanding that. We started off with one person. We now have a lieutenant, two sergeants, a staff, and now we're going to be growing it. We're going to be hiring a psychologist in there to help with that. Our peer support team ties into it. But, you know, Tucson Police Department, I think they do it right. They have an entire section division of people, and that's where we're headed. Mm. You need to take care of those who take care of us.
Let's talk a little bit about the jail situation. There's been a lot of talk about what we need to do about it. Something will probably be done, but I know you've got some strong thoughts on it. Have those thoughts changed at all after this dialogue that's been going on for almost a year now? I think we've been talking about this.
No, actually, 2021 is when I first came into this saying, I think we got a problem, and rang some bells and made some statements about a crisis. I know this isn't a crisis. It is a crisis. Mm-hmm. Put the semantics away. To me, it is about keeping people safe on both sides of that fence, right? Mm-hmm. And that facility, 40, 50 years ago when it was built, was state of the art. However, as time went on and additions are made, mistakes were made in some of those additions in terms of the type of correctional sciences you want to apply. To me, strictly being, that facility was originally designed to be a direct supervision jail. Think of a babysitter. Is that babysitter better off in the living room with a monitor and going in every 20 minutes checking on the child? Or is it better if that babysitter's right in the room the entire 24/7 with that child? Mm-hmm. That's direct supervision. that's what we want to achieve at our jail. And I think that the biggest explosion from this was, oh my goodness, it's going to cost $800 million. Well, I guess it could, but I don't think it has to. I think there are design facilities that if you look around the world, Australia being one of them, and I've got a reporter from Australia coming in the late July to meet with me and discuss some of those issues. They have a facility that doesn't have 12, 18-inch thick concrete walls, which we have.
What does it have?
It has a picture, a concrete-walled building that's a warehouse.
Yeah.
And in the middle of that warehouse is simply partitions, four-foot-high partitions, L-shaped. On one side of the L is a bunk bed. On the other side is a TV, desk, monitor. All your visitations are there. Everything you can order your commissary. It just makes sense. And where are your guards? Where are your COs? Mm-hmm. They're above, just looking down on them the whole time. There's no doors. Our jail right now has $22,000 steel doors. That if the lock, if you want to replace the lock, if
waiting for Dillinger's nephew. Well,
if I want to replace the lock on your door, you would go to Ace and buy a $10 lock. Ours are $1,800. We don't need those doors and we don't need those locks.
Yeah.
You let me say this.
Yeah.
There are some people in that jail that are just very, very bad people. Mm-hmm. You're going to need something like that. But that's a small percentage. The entire facility is that way. And I think it's just a matter of now let's get, I think the Blue Ribbon Commission did a great job in saying, hey, there are some real big issues here and you need to look at it. And now I'm hoping
you're saying think out of the box, look at what's done around the country or world.
Design what we believe would work and based on what others have done and then bring that to a design construction engineer and say, what do you think this is going to cost?
Number on that one, yeah. What's the number on that?
Think of your offices with partitions. Yeah. I have a floor. My entire second floor of my building is detective. They don't have offices. They have partitions. They're
cubicles.
Yeah. Those cost us about $15,000 for about 100 of them.
Let me point out that years ago, Richard Pryor did a show in a prison, and he came out and he said, I'm glad we have prisons. So we do have
rough customers.
However, I have a friend who's been a guest of a state prison for a while, and I did visit, and he was explaining like these little, call them pony walls, and basically you have your own apartment, but it's just a little wall, but you feel like it's your space. And for him, that was fine, but I know you do get some rough customers in there. You said in the Green Valley debate that a new jail could cost as much as $1 billion. I know you're just kind of throwing that out there, but some of the ideas that you're looking at, could it substantially reduce that cost?
One, I'm not an engineer or any kind of designist or architect, but I do believe if you look at, because where did I get the $1 billion from? The Blue Ribbon Commission looked around the country saying, who's building new jails? Cobb County in Atlanta built a new jail, $1.2 billion. Mm. Now, that's a few more beds than we wanted, too, but that's an expensive jail. And there's another county in Kentucky that did the same for $1 billion. So they're just throwing out, hey, here's what we're seeing in the country. But I think that if you really take a look at what's going around the world, there's some jails in Switzerland or Sweden that you go, that's not really a jail.
Yeah, but I think Norway is.
So that may be too far over to thinking. But there designs.
Almost looks like a country club there.
Yeah. Well, we have some federal prisons that they're described that way. All I'm saying is, let's not get focused on dollar figures yet. Let's get focused on the need, and the need exists that place is falling apart, and we're throwing a lot of good money after bad. So why don't we, while we're doing that, because we have to, start looking to the future and start with a design. What would it cost to build this kind of facility, and would this facility fit the needs of this community?
And Dan, a listener just wondered about, is there a detox facility?
Right, and that's a good point because, again, going back to that debate, you had mentioned the huge number of mental health and drug issues that come in there, and we have seen it in the county attorney debate, is it incarceration or is it rehabilitation and all these different things, but hey, they come to the jail and you're stuck with them. How does that play into a design of a new jail?
Well, it does. I just think you need to be cautious. And by that, I'm simply saying first of all, when we came back in 2021, there were 7 detox beds for 1,800 people at the time. That's not enough. We know that our jail has at least half of its population is on some sort of psychotropic med.
So that would be like your normal population is around 1,500. So you're saying 700 to 800 have some kind of a drug issue.
Mental health. Okay. Drugs is another. On substance abuse, they're putting us at about anywhere from 2/3 to 3/4 of our population suffer from substance abuse. Mm-hmm. So that's a large number. You're talking close to 1,000 people. There is a need for detox. However, you have to be careful from that push from outside that says, we want housing, we want transition housing, we want detox, we want mental health, I want all that too, but at what cost? Because there's not just a cost of a dollar, there's a cost that you're telling your community something here. Hey, you on the street that's homeless, you want housing? We're gonna have to take you to jail. Hey, there's a guy here who's out of his mind on fentanyl or cocaine or whatever it is, some sort of substance. You want help? You got to go to jail. No, I think we have social services that exist in this community that could use some support from taxpayers, government, whatever you want to call it. But they have the abilities. Our crisis response center is a full-blown medical center for those who suffer from mental health and substance abuse. Dr. Balfour does a great job with all of those hundreds, if not thousands, she sees every week on an outpatient clinic. And you know what? That place, clean, never a problem, nice, well-built, no issues. And yet there's nobody in there with a badge or a gun. They're all mental health practitioners or at least medical professionals who can provide the right services for this
We're
community.
At the break right now. We'll have more with Sheriff Chris Nanos. It's the Buckmaster Show. Dan Shear is here from the Green Valley News. We'll continue. It's Friday on Buckmaster, the last Friday of June already.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is finalizing a new 20-year plan for RTA board review and approval to seek public feedback on the draft plan. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, Friday edition. Chris Nanos is here, Pima County Sheriff, as is Dan Scheer from the Green Valley News and Saharita Sun. Dan, you've got 33 papers now with the WIC, part of the WIC communications group.
We sold off Louisiana. So
that so was one the list. Paper in Baton Rouge?
That was in New Iberia. So
just across the river.
Yes, and we had one there too, and then the hurricane came and everything. Mm-hmm. So we're buying and selling. We bought Flagstaff last fall. We've talked about that and
the Flagstaff Sun.
Daily Sun, and terrific people up there. Really, really a good buy, as mm-hmm. we say. Mm-hmm. So
is the star on your horizon?
It's not on mine.
No. Okay. All right. Dan, why don't you begin this round of questioning with Sheriff Nanos?
I don't know how, but half of Green Valley has my cell number, and I don't even know who's talking to me half the time. There's a rumor out there about putting a jail in Vail. Accurate or not?
Somebody needs to share that rumor with me. I have not heard that, and okay. I just want a jail where I don't care where it is, as long as it's in Pima County. You know, I want to be clear something. I want to go back to that issue of those who suffer from mental health and drug addiction. Trust me, we have people in our jail who suffer from either one of those or both, and they can never be released. They're just that they need to be in jail. But there are also those, many, many more of those, who I think we could do better with providing them the services they need. When I say we don't want any wraparound services, that's not the case. We need some, but it has to be within reason, and it has to be based on what your data is showing you, what's your populace say, but also cost considerations have to be there, because we do have a great community who does a lot of good things with just donations, mm-hmm. volunteers. And so I think we need to sometimes lean more on that.
Dan, I wanted to move off from the jail for a bit, if you don't mind. Sure. I wanted to talk a little bit about the narrative, Sheriff, that some have about the city of Tucson, that it's a very unsafe place. What about Pima County? Are we generally a safe county?
Well, I would tell you that we are safer than the city, but Chad Kazmar might get upset with me for saying such a thing. You know, I'm being light about that, of course. Mm-hmm. Tucson, the city, just as any urban area, is going to have its issues. It's that density, all that populace, and it does show in their crime reports. I believe, though, that we as a county are doing pretty well with our numbers in terms of crime. And I don't, you know, maybe I should. I don't dig into all the depth of crime. I look at what the Uniform Crime Reporting System, that's governed by the FBI and Department of Justice, and what those numbers show us. And we look at those numbers every single month.
And share with us, what is it showing?
You know, it shows that we're pretty much, I'd say, flat. We're down in some crimes, but we're also up in others. When you look at what we call Part 1 crimes, the major crimes, the violent crimes, the homicides, the rapes, the robberies, those are down, but the city is down as well. Mm-hmm. It's a matter of how much down, not in terms of percentage, but numbers. The mm-hmm. city has some, you know, if you had 100 homicides and you came down to 50, that's awesome, right? You've got mm-hmm. a 50% mm-hmm. reduction. But you still had 50.
Yeah,
we're nowhere near that. I think today we're sitting at 6 homicides for the year.
How about property crimes?
Property crimes, you know,
break-ins.
I think as your population grows, you're going to see those numbers rise. That's mm-hmm. that's what I see. And yes, we do see if there was any crime, TPD I think reported of all the crimes they saw the greatest increase, it was auto theft, which I thought was interesting because with the newest technology in cars, you would expect that to be down. Hmm. Ours isn't auto thefts. If we have a rise, I think the last month I checked it, there was a rise in property crimes of about 5 to 6%. But it's nothing, crime is it ebbs and flows, but you know, and you could go back 10 years, 20 years, 30. I think they look at studies all the way back to the 70s. I just kind of look at how are we doing today? Are we dealing with those problems that are there in front of us? When someone calls us, what are we doing? Are we just saying there's nothing we can do about it? We're too busy?
Are you answering calls when they come?
Every single person. Now, we are looking at, we answer every call. If you call us for whatever the case is, it may take us a while to get
but
there.
You will
but
come
if you
out?
Tell us you want a deputy, the deputy's going to be there. The city's under a different scope. They just have so many. First of all, Chad will tell you, he's several hundred officers still short.
And what about you with your deputies?
I believe we're short-staffed, but that's in terms of what I'm allowed to hire. Right now, we are at almost, department-wide, we're about 95%, 96% of department-wide. The corrections side of the house, as of last week, were at 100%. Today, they're probably down to 96, 97, but we have another academy class graduating in about 2 weeks. So those numbers constant. But the deputy side, we're growing, and that's going to get to, right now, so Tucson Police just hired, had graduated a class of, I think it was 29, and they were very proud of that number because we'd seen graduation classes of 7. So they're getting their numbers up. We had a class of 40-some, and right now, currently today, where there's another class of 40-some.
Is your pay comparable?
I hope so. We have always been fighting for comprehension. For a compensation package that was parity with nobody else. We don't want you to compare us with Albuquerque or Phoenix. That's not who I recruit with. I fight with Tucson Police. And we are pretty comparable, but they're going to get a pay raise this year that will probably jump them up. But I've got Ms. Lesher and the board saying we will be committed to our study and keep that parity there. And I hope they're true to their words, because that's a big issue for retention. But the bigger issue is, to me, is how we treat our staff. That is really where you make grounds in retention.
So just to be clear here, you're saying that you're 95% of budgeted staff, correct, but you really need a whole lot more. Well, so what are those conversations like?
So, shame on me. I'll take this one. When I first came in here in 21, I saw, wow, we had 1,686 PCNs, and now we're at 1,282. That's 400 people. I went to the board immediately and said, this is not sustainable. I need 168 more deputies. And the board looked at me, and I had to take it. They said, well, Sheriff, go hire them. You have 200 PCNs that are empty. Go fill those. Then tell us what you need. And I kind of looked at them and went, oh, yeah, you're right. So we went. We did that. We have now hired those 200 and some that we were short. We're now trying to get to 1,496 is what we're authorized. But that number authorized, that's the most I can hire today, is lower than any authorized number in the last 20 years. So we are, even if I'm at 100%, go back 20 years and I'm still understaffed compared to any number of those 20 years before. And we know crime's not gone down. We know our population hasn't gone down. So I'm trying to come back to the board and say, hey, okay, we got our numbers up to that 195 to 100% rate, but I still have some ideas that I'd like to incorporate, mainly community policing ideas, that you can't in today's world be an effective police agency by simply just responding to calls. We need to be more engaged with our community. We need to be more active with our community and our youth in our community if we really want to have an impact on law enforcement and on our safety of our communities.
Dan, did you want to talk about the border?
Yes, because, you know, obviously we have one GOP candidate who's everything he's talking about is the border. We know that it affects us. The county borders Mexico. You have, for reasons that you have explained in the past, the county has not taken Stone Garden money, which would really help out with some of those issues, but it takes employees out from under your purview and really gives them to federal agencies. How much of a threat is the border to Pima County? You know, I'm talking crime specifically, not people coming through and running off to New York.
Yeah, and so that's, you know, you're exactly right. How many of those that come into our country unlawfully or whatever, they enter unlawfully and they commit crimes? Well, to be honest with you, the only way you're going to know that is to look at your arrest records. And so we look at, what is the population in my jail made up? It's less than of those who are migrants who have been arrested for a crime other than crossing into the country unlawfully, just those, it's less than 3% of my jail. So, yes, can they come in and break into somebody's home, or can they do some harm to somebody? Absolutely. They're humans like the rest of the world. And I'm guessing, like the rest of the world, 90-some percent of them are good people. They just want a better life. But you do have some elements there that aren't good people, mm-hmm. just as you do in your own neighborhoods. So I kind of look at the border issues as I've always looked at it. One, quit politicizing it. Come up with solutions. Two, it is a federal government issue. It shouldn't be thrown back on the county. The state was going to pass a bill here just recently. I don't think it's made it that far. I think the governor was going to veto it. But it was basically going to say we could arrest migrants when they cross over unlawfully if we see them. First of all, I don't need that bill. We know that. If I'm at the border and I see somebody come across, I will stop them, arrest them, give them to Border Patrol and go on our way. But they're trying to make it, well, but the sheriff doesn't really need money for this because he can decide to do it or not. Really?
Well, what you're describing is House Concurrent Resolution 2060, which is actually going to be on the ballot in November, and it does exactly what you say. Mm-hmm. It could give you the authority to arrest those who have been determined to not come over the border through a port. And so now we're taking local law enforcement and turning them into federal agents, which I know local law enforcement has never been in favor of that.
Well, because it's an unfunded mandate.
Right,
I mean,
exactly.
I struggle right now. Everybody knows it. The Board of Supervisors probably hates me because every time I'm there, I'm asking for something. I need more money. I need more bodies. I need. And they're probably tired of hearing that. But that's really part of my role, is to go to them and share with them my needs. One of the things if they're going to tell me I have to enforce border crime or border illegal entry into this country, well, then I'm going to need more money there, too, because how many thousands come across this border? I don't have staffing to do the traffic enforcement I want to do out here, much less staff that border. It's the longest border anywhere in the country with Mexico. It's 125 miles I'd have to staff.
Well, let me throw a little twist in this, then. Say that they are not demanding that you arrest them, but isn't that a nice thing to have in your back pocket in case you need it, one of your deputies
need
it?
Well, no, because if I need it, I do it. If a deputy sees, because that's a part of it, and you're right, it is going to the voters, my mistake. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be vetoed. It will go for the voters. I hope they veto it. But the issue is, yes, it's in my back pocket that I can arrest them. But the Senate would tell you the way the legislation's drawn up is, it can only be an arrest if you see them cross unlawfully. Well, today that happens. If I see you come across the border unlawfully, we stop you. We call Border Patrol. I don't need a law for that. There is a law for that.
Okay, very good.
All right. Before we go, we need to talk about, you brought this up, traffic enforcement. Do you have some motorcycles that are just sitting because you can't get enough folks to take those jobs?
You know, and I would, yes, that's okay. That's the short answer. But let me say this. First of all, I am not a motorcycle fan. I've seen a lot of accidents. There's no such thing as a fender bender on a motorcycle. Every one of them has really bad injuries. Yeah. And so our young team of young officers, maybe it's the millennials, maybe it's their attitude. Years ago, it was like, this is cool.
They all wanted to be in the motor unit,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Maybe it's because Chips was on TV. Yeah. I don't know. But now that level of participation from my team is not as demanding. Mm-hmm. They'd much rather do other things. Mm-hmm. Hey, I'd rather be doing homicides or burglaries. Mm-hmm. So it is a difficult job to fill, but we do have some. What I'm looking at, though, is The motorcycles, if you think of how that team worked, they were to hide. They were to be not visible. Mm-hmm. They're small. They can get out, move in and out of traffic quickly and tag you. Oh, this guy's speeding and this guy's done this. And so they were like really kind of behind the billboard kite thing and would knock you down for speeding. Today, though, I would much rather see what we have in place is a selective enforcement team, and their whole concept is visibility. Mm-hmm. We all know if you're driving, I do it. I'm driving, I see a marked patrol car.
You break.
You break. Yeah. You look down at your speedometer. It's habit. Yeah. It's just nature. And so you do that. That officer presence means something, particularly on our roadways. And we know we have some red light violators at some of the busiest intersections, and we have pedestrian problems. And yet, if I can't put together a team that is one high visibility, big old marked trucks, cars, whatever, at the 10 busiest intersections, at the busiest times of day, our rush hour traffic in the morning, our rush hour traffic in the evening, if I can do that, at least it has some impact, and we've seen it. They are averaging well over 1,000 stops a month, and this team is not just doing that. They're also taking calls from the field if they need to, if the field is shorthanded, because I hear that, well, you're just creating these units, and it's hurting the field, and that patrol is the backbone of the department. Well, that's a kind of nice way to say it, that they're important, but I, as the leader of this organization, do not think that way. I think the backbone of our department is our support personnel, those men and women who are behind the scenes supporting the great efforts put in by those in the field patrolling or those at COs. Those civilian individuals, our dispatchers, our transcribers, take them out of the equation and tell me how effective we are. I look at all of my team in their roles. They have an important piece to play. None is more important than the other. But if you put together some community policing programs like our school resource officers, our selective enforcement teams, our traffic teams, you put those out there, you're impacting greatly the ability of patrol to do what they're supposed to do and patrol.
Okay, Sheriff, we're out of time, but can they use the radar guns in Pima County?
Absolutely, they do. And they do? They still write a lot of tickets. Mostly, okay. I'm more for them to be educational. And they do that, but if they catch you, good luck. You could get a ticket.
All right. Thank you very much, Sheriff. Good to see you. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Dan.
All right, Dan, stick around. I'll be back with you and the rest of the folks right after we take a break on the Buckmaster Show Friday edition.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana. Plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
The The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, the last Friday of June. My buddy Dan Scheer is here from the Green Valley News and Saharita Sun. I'm so glad to have Dan back eyeball to eyeball. He's been so busy with the grand jury, and the grand jury is now in the rearview mirror. You've been out doing a lot of local debates. That we have early July. A July primary?
Yes.
In Arizona? Any some sense people, about the interest of this?
Well, you know, and a lot of people didn't realize that I think it's the state legislature moved it back a week. It was going to be in early August, and then suddenly it's a July 30th one, which was like, you know, July is a great month to get anything done in Arizona. But yeah. Just like 4 years ago, the county attorney's race will be decided in the primary because there are no Republican candidates. And so so this is Mike Jetty and Laura Conover, who is the incumbent, of course. And I moderated a debate among them, 6, 7 weeks ago down in Green Valley, very well attended, lots of great questions. And they're similar people, but they have different styles, if that makes sense, similar in the way they think about the issues and stuff. So that's going to be an interesting one. But here's the real question, though, Bill. You and I, it's our world, so we're really into this. But how many people really know what a county attorney does? How many of them really care? How many are going to go in informed and ready to vote on that, because this race will be decided here in the next few weeks.
Sure. Yeah, so. But a lot of people do kind of, they think county attorney, I'm not quite sure what that is.
And, right. And unless something
it's
has happened
like
to you.
It's kind of like people that are up for the Arizona Corporation Commission.
Exactly.
ACC, what is it? I mean, every time we have Leah Marquez Peterson on, we try to explain.
Yes.
This is very important.
It is important. And about, I think it was 8 years ago, we had a very important race, maybe longer than that. A lot of going on in the ACC, and there was a tremendous amount of interest and everything. So if you have this, you know, eruption going on in the department or in the race, then people will pay attention. Other than that, like you say, it has to be explained to them exactly what the ACC does, even the Board of Supervisors, you know, and all five seats are up this year. So it's a learning curve. And sometimes, you know, I just shot a video for our company, and I said, look, if you don't know the candidates, you don't know the issues, don't vote. And I know this is contrary to everything we've been telling people, you know, vote, but vote informed or just don't vote.
And we may have as many as 15 propositions on the ballot.
And we learned that on July 3rd is when that's the deadline. And so this would be like the Arizona Right to Abortion Initiative and all of these different things. So we're going to see these. They don't have numbers yet, but they'll all be given a number and we'll educate people on them. And this is in the November ballot, but those are some of them are going to be like boring, quite honestly. Mm-hmm. Some of them are going to be really potentially life-changing. And one of them we were just talking to the sheriff about, House Concurrent Resolution 2060 is going to be on there. So just know what they're all about, not what people tell you they're all about. Mm-hmm. Go and read them for yourselves.
Mm-hmm. A quick question about your duty on the grand jury. What was the takeaway of what did you learn? Was there one kind of a marquee thing that came that really was glaring for you?
There were a few things, and again, again, just to explain real briefly, the grand jury can, if you're in a regular jury, the case is over, you can say anything you want, what happened in the jury room, the discussions, everything. Grand jury's not like that. You can't talk about anything that happened inside that room beyond just kind of, just generally, just generalizations.
Cases are kind of ongoing, right?
Well, a lot of people...
Some may not ever see the light of day, right?
They may not be indicted. We heard, and we did not indict in, we heard 530 cases.
Oh my gosh.
We did not indict in a dozen of them. So that's about 2.3% as I recall, which is fairly typical for a grand jury. And so, for those, you don't want names out there of people who were brought before the grand jury and aren't indicted. And, or we may have a pile of charges in front of us and we say, well, we like this one, we don't like that one, we're going to strengthen that one or whatever. We have that power to really change the charges. And then after that, lots of things happen, wheeling and dealing and whatever. But I will tell you this, the takeaways are that fentanyl is a major, major issue. And let me give you an example. You're walking down the street and a transient says, hey, can I just have a dollar? And you're thinking, that's just a dollar. Do you know that that's about the going price for one fentanyl pill?
Is it really?
Yeah. I can tell you where to buy the pills. Oh. I can tell you what's a good deal and what's not. I can tell you that you can actually get a discount if you have a bulk purchase, which isn't that just something else. So so a dollar could really just be stringing this person along. They need, the average one probably does 12 to 15 a day.
Yeah.
And that's why they're on the street corner asking for a dollar. So what an awful problem we have. It is.
Give them water or kind of juice.
Buy them a sandwich,
Don't
give them anything that is marketable, but it's really something else, Bill, but I came away, just really feeling like how do you beat this one? It's tough.
Yeah.
It's tough.
Dan, always a pleasure. Thanks
for
coming.
Yeah, thank you, and I'm so glad to be back.
Thank you very much. All right, we'll take a break right here. Another Dan is waiting in the wings, Dan Gibson with Weekend Watch.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
Pima Association of Governments, the Greater Tucson Region's metropolitan planning organization, is developing a new long-range transportation plan for the next 30 years. Shape your transportation future and tell us your transportation project and funding priorities. Take the survey at pagregion.com/2055. That's pagregion.com/2055.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
What do you say we stir it up? It is time for a Weekend Watch with Dan Gibson, presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. This time of year, I love to look at the midday forecast over in Silver City because it's cooler over there. Upper 80s right now, can't beat it. In the summertime, it's worth the three-hour drive. Well, in the winter, too, but year-round, it's certainly summertime. The payoff will be cooler climbs. And that elevation of about a mile high, 5,000 to 7,000 feet, it really does pay off in cooler temperatures. I'm looking at their forecast. They've got some mid-80s in there, so can't beat it. SouthwestNewMexico.org, the starting place before you hop in the car, truck, or even on the motorcycle and head over to Silver City. It's time for us to head on the live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management to Mr. Dan Gibson, the host of the Buckmaster Show's Weekend Watch. Hey, Dan, how are you?
I am okay. How are you?
Doing well. You took, what is it, last week you were off?
I had some work thing. Too much work. Too much work. No, that's fine. I'm thankful. Thankful for what I do at TMC. Great week for stuff, though. I'm excited to share all this stuff with you, Bill.
We are ready. We are ready for you, sir. Go ahead.
New restaurant alert. Dominique Stoller, who's a chef in town who spent some time at Hub and some other places, she has a new restaurant at the Baffert at Five Points. That's at 119 East 18th Street, called Casa Madre. They have the first Tucson Himalayan salt wall in a restaurant. So that's cool.
Himalayan?
It's a giant wall of salt. It changes. It's nice vibes, you know.
Huh.
They're open from 4 to 9 p.m. Wednesday through Sunday. It's sort of like a little bit like riffs on Mexican food, but also some other, you know, influences from around the world. They have pork belly wings, a tilapia pilapote, lemon icebox cake. It's a nice short menu, but looks delicious. I've not made it over there yet, hoping maybe to do that this week. But make reservations online. New restaurants usually fill up pretty quickly.
Yeah, sounds very tempting.
Next weekend starts a little bit early because of the 4th of July. Wednesday, July 3rd, they're having Hacienda del Sol is having their 8th annual Red, White, and Brew. It is from 6 to 9 p.m. It features unlimited beer tastings from Arizona breweries, an Independence Day-inspired buffet and live music. Tickets are $70. That includes the beer tasting and all the and including also craft non-alcoholic beverages and the buffet. If you're not feeling like drinking, they are looking out for you as well.
Sounds like a great event. And you know, anytime beer is involved, there are so many beer aficionados in this town. They'll have no trouble filling up the space.
It's also just lovely at Hacienda del Sol. So anytime you have an opportunity to be out there, you win just
you
by
do.
Being there.
It's a win-win. Go ahead.
Totally different. Friday, July 19th. That's way ahead. Let's not do that one. Why do they even forget it, Bill? Tonight at The Rock, 136 North Park Avenue. This is intriguing to me. Kung Fu Vampire, an American goth rapper from San Jose, California. I didn't bother look anything up about it. That it's a concert from someone named Kung Fu Vampire is kind of appealing on its own, right? Like, what does that even mean? Who could even say?
I don't know.
The show's at 6:30. Tickets are $18 on Eventbrite.
That ought to be. I wouldn't know what to expect with that one. Let's just leave it at that.
No, I don't either. I don't want to ruin the surprise.
Okay.
Also this week, Laser Stranger Things at the Flanders Science Center. They've upped their whole laser show game there in the planetarium. People love the Netflix show Stranger Things, so you can take a trip to the Upside Down, experiencing 80s tunes and soundscapes from the show in laser lights. Tickets are that show is weirdly from 3 to 4 p.m. So if you feel like doing something on the 4th of July, midday, the kids are out, you're off work, solid plan all the way around.
Sounds like it's going to be a great Independence Day, long weekend, a lot of folks taking Friday off, including us. We'll have a couple of previously aired segments that we think are worth a second listen. So, Dan, it will be a couple of weeks till I hear from you, so have a wonderful Independence Day weekend.
I will. I'm just going to yell out weekend watch from my house, just from my porch.
There you go. All right, Dan, thanks very much.
All right, talk to you later.
Buckmaster Show is a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, wholly responsible for the content of our program. Thanks, Tom Fairbanks. On the other side of the glass, Bill Buckmaster wishing everyone well.